from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro. You don't have to be an English teacher to groan every time you hear a politician spout yet another cliché. A couple of political analysts, dare we say pundits, have started tracking these words and phrases, and they're out with a new ebook focused on the 2016 presidential race. The book is called Double Talk, The Language, Code, and Jargon of a Presidential Election. And we have here one of the co-authors in studio with us, David Mark, editor at CNN Politics and co-author with Chuck McCutcheon of this new ebook. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about what inspired these books.
This ebook follows up on our original publication, Dog Whistles, Walkbacks, and Washington Handshakes, which was essentially a political dictionary about what elected officials, campaigners, people in politics really mean when they use this often heard kind of convoluted phrasing. The idea behind it is Chuck and I are both longtime political reporters in Washington, D.C. We found after standing outside enough closed-door meetings in the Capitol, hearing elected officials come out and use the same pablum and tried, tired phrases, we decided to dissect them and get at what they were really meaning, because we found that elected officials of both parties tended to use the same phrases repeatedly.
Oh, my gosh. So many of them. You know, the one that I used tweeting about the show this morning is a Latin phrase, or it comes from the original Latin. And I'm not even sure that politicians know that anyone understand what we're talking about when we say ad hominem attacks.
Right. This is one that probably goes beyond politics as well. It's just meant as something where you're throwing out an attack indiscriminately. Usually, though, elected officials, politicians are pretty deliberate with who they're attacking, why they do. They usually have focus grouped it, market tested it. They have some constituency they're trying to reach. So they're usually pretty targeted in who they go after.
You know, this is something I've thought about reading this book a lot, which is that in some ways we could just blame pollsters and, you know, political consultants, because a lot of these choices, you know, to refer to a problem as an opportunity, for instance.
Or a challenge is another one.
You know, politicians are told to use this language to appeal to people or not to offend them.
Right. And that goes back to one of the origins of writing this book. A lot of elected officials in top positions had real accomplishments professionally before they got into elected office. They were trial lawyers or doctors, business executives, military officers. And you just know that when they were trying cases, dealing with patients, are haggling with suppliers, inventory and business transactions, that sort of thing, you just know they didn't speak like this. So it was just fascinating. Once they got into elected office, they have been told to speak very deliberately with the same kind of phrases. Part of it is out of caution. They want to be very careful. They're not caught off guard in this age of YouTube or Twitter. One errant comment could get you into a lot of trouble. But I think there's a real appetite out there for authenticity.
Certainly, and people get offended, really, when they feel like they're being talked down to.
Well, that's right. And I think that's one of the phenomena factors that's driving Donald Trump's popularity. Agree with him or not, like him or not, I think there's a lot of attraction to him because he doesn't sound like a politician. He sounds like a normal, everyday person, almost what critics might say a schoolyard bully. Supporters would have a different type of view. But I think there's a real appetite out there compared to the rest of his Republican rivals, who frankly sound like stiffs when they're out there giving the same tired and true phrases. On the other side of the aisle, Bernie Sanders is somebody who I think comes across very authentic. Again, one can disagree with him or not on the issues, but you know he truly believes what he's saying.
Gosh, there's so many phrases here, many of which are really just cliches that we use all over the place. Carry water for, charm, offensive. Maybe a phrase like conversations with citizens is not, you know, normal English.
Right. Yeah. Well, that implies that the elected official is going down to the corner store, going to the Starbucks and just chatting it up, when in reality, at the top tier of politics, they've had campaign aides staff this, advance it. They know just who they're going to talk to. It's not like Hillary Clinton is just wandering into a Starbucks or something of that nature. She's somebody whose campaign uses that sort of phrase a lot. In the original book, Dog Whistles, one of our favorite terms was when an elected official says, quote, we need to have a conversation about this or that, which really is code word for this is the last thing on earth I want to be discussing. It's a phrase actually President Obama uses a lot when he's been asked about, say, legalization of marijuana in various states or national security revelations by Edward Snowden or other issues that he really doesn't want to be discussing. He's kind of famous for saying, yeah, we need to have a conversation about this or that.
It's like saying, that's a good question, right, while you're trying to gather your
thoughts.
That's
a possibility.
So, dear listeners, what drives you nuts? What kind of political jargon do you want to run by David Mark? Call us at 866-733-6786. Once again, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Tweet to @KQED Forum. We're watching our Facebook page as well. You know, when you were here last year talking about the first book, Dog Whistles.
The long title, yes.
Yes, I love the word dog whistle, though, because, basically it's a word that indicates the politician is reaching out to a specific segment of the population to say, I know this is an issue that resonates with you. And oftentimes they're using a soft phrase, a euphemistic phrase to sort of get past what is really an offensive comment. For instance, San Francisco values or, New York values. But San Francisco values, it obviously drives me nuts because in the same breath, many of the same politicians will then praise Silicon Valley. Have they not looked at a map? Silicon Valley, San Francisco, the San Francisco Bay Area, all of a piece?
That's right. The income distribution, all the social issues that go along with that. This is, the Bay Area is perhaps the most capitalistic region in the country, maybe outside of New York.
And yet it votes predominantly Democratic, so these conservative politicians seem to want to have it both ways.
Yeah, it's something that really plays in, I suppose, certain parts of the country. It's not unlike Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, Republican presidential candidate, recently invoking quote-unquote New York values when discussing Donald Trump. Now, I think there's actually some reason for optimism. There was a time not too long ago when New York values would have had a certain pejorative factor about certain religious groups, and I think we're past that. There's been a bit of chatter about that on the internet, but I don't think most people even took it that way from Ted Cruz. It is, though, sectionalism, and it goes both ways, though.
He ended up apologizing for that. Yeah.
Well, sort of. It was really actually kind of a backhanded apology. Yeah. He said, basically, I apologize to all the New Yorkers who vote for liberal politicians. So it was really kind of a smarmy, backhanded apology. And Ted Cruz, agree with him or like him or not, he knows what he's doing. He must have some reason to think this will be effective.
What about the phrase freshness test?
This is another kind of poll tested phrase where you're trying to sound bold. That's another one that's kind of a cousin of freshness test, where you're trying to come up with something new and original. It almost sounds like picking out a piece of fruit at the store. It's something that you'll hear from campaigners. And I don't know that one's caught on quite as much because I think it almost sounds so contrived.
It does. It sounds like insider speak, like we're having this discussion behind closed doors. Let's turn to the phones now, and Eric in San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. One of the phrases that I hear a ton that just kind of always amuses me is out of touch. It just seems like they can use that as the go-to phrase whenever their opponent disagrees with them. They just say they're out of touch. But if you look at all the candidates, you got a billionaire running for president. You have, these kind of evangelical far-right people who just seem like they're all out of touch themselves when they use that phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a long-standing phrase in political conversation and dialogue, and you hear everybody from Donald Trump to Ted Cruz, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and everybody in between using this phrase, whether it, in the view of some, it's, quote, liberal elites in places like New York and San Francisco, or those on the right, evangelicals that you might hear more on the Democratic side to say they're out out of touch. It's like invoking, quote, the American people behind your side. It's a broad, sweeping way of bringing in the entire populace to your viewpoint, even when that's probably not the case.
And of course, every politician believes he or she is in touch with what the American people want.
Well, that's right. Everybody considers themselves a moderate in the mainstream when a lot of other people might have a very different viewpoint.
You know, there's something else as well, I guess. We're talking about a group of people that are very keen to suggest they're not part of the establishment. They're not part of the Beltway and all of its politics, even though if they're not actually members of the 1%, they are talking to members of the 1% in hopes that they will be funded by the 1%.
Right. It's always funny to hear candidates talk about themselves being outside the establishment, particularly if they're city elected officials. If you're a member of Congress or a governor or some other elected position, you're automatically in the mainstream, in the establishment, because you are the rulemaker. So when you hear somebody like Ted Cruz talking about the Republican establishment, it's always an interesting juxtaposition. And indeed, take your point, to run for office, you have to raise massive amounts of funds. Even somebody like Bernie Sanders, who's very much for, say, public funding of elections or campaign finance changes, he's going around raising lots of money. It's just the rules of the game. You have to if you want to have any remote chance of winning.
Well, no, let's have a little fun with Hillary Clinton. She likes to refer to everyday Americans. What does she mean by that? Does she mean anybody who is not her?
This is a kind of a funny phrase in that it's derivation and update of the phrase the common man, everyday person, something like that. It's something that elected officials have actually wrestled with for decades now, really going back at least to the New Deal, Franklin Roosevelt talking about the common man. It's a tricky situation because you want to have that populist appeal and be able to reach out to the masses. At the same time, you don't want to come off as a Marie Antoinette type character where you really are talking down to people and making yourself seem elite and effete. So
let them eat cake.
That's right. And so it's something that elected officials and candidates have really wrestled with, some more effectively than others. I think with Hillary Clinton, campaigning, electoral politics is not always her strong point. That one came off a little bit flat.
Let's go to another call. We've got Randolph in Oakland.
Hi there.
Hi.
If I never hear another politician on the national stage say the American people, I will be greatly relieved. The same way local politicians speak about.
Randolph, you got a terrible phone line there. I'll finish your comments there for. So, American people, once again, he also wanted to mention that politicians are constantly referring to community, and it's often not clear what community they mean.
Yeah, those are great points. The American people is maybe the most used phrase on the floor of Congress. If you do a word cloud search for what's uttered on the floor of the House and Senate, that one in recent years has actually come up as among the top phrases. It's always in the top two or three each year. And right, community is making it sound like an elected official or a candidate is being inclusive, like they're trying to be bringing everybody. And it's really just plainly not true oftentimes, because elections, getting into office, is really about, frankly, limiting the amount of people you want to vote. It's not like selling a commercial product, toothpaste, laundry detergent, where you're really going for massive market share. Running for office, what you really want is to get your own side out on election day and to keep everybody else away. Candidates, campaign consultants don't come out and say that openly, but that's why it's always funny to hear these candidates talk about widening the community, when in reality, their whole goal is just to get out a certain slice and segment of it.
So if their intention is to offend, they're doing a great job.
Well, a lot of candidates, sitting elected officials, they go out of their way to be nice people, not to offend. And they try to sort of have that positive, negative type approach, some more
they're
effectively
killing
than
us
others.
Softly.
That's right. Donald Trump accepted most of them take that approach.
Right. Well, so then there's this other question of empty words, empty phrases, like it's just politics or innovation. That's when we hear about Silicon Valley a lot. You know, like it almost seems like they've got a stock set of phrases that they just use to fill space when they can't think of what else to say.
Yeah, the innovation one I find particularly funny, having spent time in Silicon Valley, in that a lot of these candidates, these elected officials, you know, many of them are older. They're in their 50s or 60s. They had prior careers. They're not exactly the most tech-friendly type people. Many of them can barely use their phones. They have staff tell them how to do it. They're talking about the innovation economy. To me, it's particularly ironic also because a lot of folks in Silicon Valley can't stand politicians, Democrats and Republicans. They just want to do their thing, run their businesses, build out their products, and be left alone.
Well, let's put out that number one more time, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. What horrible cliches drive you nuts? Jillian tweets, a great list here, drill down, ramp up, robust, granular. At the end of the day, impact, especially used as a verb, gift, used as an adverb, out of the box. Oh, my God, that's a good one.
Indeed.
Sean writes, politics has become reality TV. Politicians are in show business. Buzzwords dominate the discussion. Even this comment I'm writing now sounds like the nonsense I'm trying to describe. Are we doomed to such a ridiculous political discourse permanently?
I'd like to think not, but I take that point in that a lot of these phrases really have become part of our daily lexicon. And I found myself in daily conversation trying to avoid some of these buzzwords and phrases today because it's so easy to fall into it. Even when I sent out a mass email, I used to write, dear friends, something of that nature. But now I've heard so many elected officials saying, my good friend says this or that, when they can't stand the other person that they're talking about. So I think it's a cautionary tale to all of us to rein it in. And I think it just gets to the broader point that there really is a hunger for authenticity and reality in how candidates speak. And sort of an acknowledgement that maybe they don't have all the answers. They're trying to wrestle through these very difficult issues.
Andrew writes, neat topic. Your guest is providing a valuable service. One phrase I hate hearing is, there's more work to be done. President Obama, though I voted for him, drives me crazy when he says it. But there's more work for all of us to do. As many times as I've heard it, I've never known where this work occurs. Whatever the work in question is, the phrase means it'll never actually be done. Tell me where to go. I'll do the work. Just please stop saying the phrase.
Yeah, that's a great one. That is indeed something that President Obama invokes quite a bit. It's interesting with the president. He's clearly got a large vocabulary. He's been quite successful in elected office. But like all elected officials, he falls back on many of these phrases. That's not a criticism. It's just to note when you're president, the microscope falls on you and it just gets amplified so much more than anybody else.
Well, you know, this goes to something you've said in previous interviews, which is that this is not easy when the spotlight is shining on you and people are looking for any opportunity to take you down.
That's right.
You are going to be careful. You're going to choose your words carefully.
That's right. Again, one errant word can do major damage. If you're president, it can move markets. If you're the Federal Reserve Chairman or something like that, there are major financial ripples that come out of that. Even just being a senator or a congressman, governor, if you make a statement, say, about a particular industry or company in your state or district that's having trouble, that can have a big effect on business issues, et cetera. So they do have to be careful. So I actually do have a certain amount of sympathy there. I just think a lot of people would appreciate it if they said, you know, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that. Let me consider this. I'll come back to it. Let me study up on this and I'll get you a better answer. I think it's that certainty that they have all the answers and that that voters are being put off like little children, that people don't like being talked down to, whether it's from the left or right, Republicans or Democrats.
Please don't ask me that question. I don't intend to answer it. Let's try Steve in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi there, guys.
Hi.
You know, you just kind of took the wind out of my sails. You know, what I was going to say as far as being talked down to is when the politician prefaces whatever they're going to say with look, comma, dot, 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 and then they continue on. To me, it's like, look, stupid, comma, here's what I want to say to you. And it's just very offensive.
Yep, I think it's an excellent point. A lot of people would feel that way. And again, I can only say that probably comes out of caution, that they're trying to preface it. When they say something like, look, you can almost see the wheels spinning in their head.
Yeah, like, quick, think of something.
That's right.
You've got to say something.
They're trying to calculate what the next sentence should be.
Yeah.
And I don't think they quite realize how much this bothers people, particularly, again, in the social media age. It was one thing when we didn't have as much access access to our elected officials. There was a time not too long ago when, particularly in California, your congressman would come in every member of Congress, congresswoman would come in every few weeks, and maybe you'd see him at a town hall or something like that. Now you can get messages from them all day long. And I think part of it is just the familiarity with elected officials.
The more you look at them, the more they disgust.
Yeah, it's not so pretty.
Thank you, Steve. Let's turn out to Sandra in South San Francisco.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
This might not be popular, but it really drives me nuts when politicians finish up with God bless America. Because I'm an atheist, but that's not why it bothers me. Why it bothers me is it's kind of like a call of exceptionalism and tribalism. And you know what? If there is a God, he's not taking sides. He's blessing everybody. Not just Americans, you know?
Does it also strike you as disingenuous, Sandra? Like you don't really mean that.
Yes, and when Obama does it, I have to tell you I'm particularly disappointed because I have a sneaking suspicion that Obama maybe doesn't particularly believe in God, but he throws that sop out there, you know, so that people feel better about what they don't feel good about with Obama. God bless America makes me think, let him bless everyone, you know, not just Americans.
That's an interesting phrase. It really started becoming used in common political parlance by presidents and elected officials lower down the line during the Cold War, during the Eisenhower era, during the 1950s, to juxtapose against the godless communists that the United States and allies was faced off again. So it's not quite recent, but it's not like that one's been around since the beginning of the Republic. And it's just sort of stuck. Good or bad, like it or not, which the caller clearly is not a fan of it, any president or, frankly, elected official who doesn't say that is just going to get in trouble. Whatever their viewpoint, privately, it's just more trouble than it's worth, not to say it. That's not saying that's right or how it should be, but it's just
how
the reality.
It is. Well, let's go now to Andrew in San Francisco.
Hi, how you doing? One question that I'd really like to know about is how these phrases actually get picked up by different politics. Well, I imagine that, or politicians, well, I imagine that some of them are kind of arising organically. I also have to imagine that there is some method that, especially those on the national stage, are using the poll to find which ones are most effective.
Thank you, Andrew. We'll let David answer that. The phone line isn't too great, but he's basically asking, right, like, so how do these polls determine people want to hear this stuff if we're all so obviously, collectively annoyed by it?
Right. A lot of the phrases that are now common in political dialogue have been clearly focus tested. Some of them really do grow up organically, and they might come from a television show or an offhand comment, whatever whatever happens, you just never quite know, just like why a song becomes popular or anything else. But some of them are by design. The whole notion of, say, climate change. It used to be global warming 20 years plus ago. That was the case. That was changed because the idea with climate change was to suggest, well, the fluctuations could be up or down. There may not be warming or tax cuts to tax relief is another one that's been moved. One the Democrats have tried with limited success is gun control to gun safety, because control came across as confiscation. Democrats have and gun control supporters have had limited success at that, but it is one that we have noticed it has changed just in the last dozen years or so.
Fudge speak. Joseph writes, every time I hear Trump use the word unbelievable, I automatically don't believe what he said. Jim writes, the first phrase I remember frustrating me was Richard Nixon's, let me say this about that. Many politicians avoid the question and turn it in another direction. Pez writes, one that always drives me nuts is when politicians refer to families as sitting at the kitchen table, be it to discuss issues or do accounting. Do people really sit at this proverbial kitchen table? Let's go to another call. Charlie in San Francisco.
Hi. One thing I noticed is that politicians really want to avoid talking about what would be considered working class people in Europe or poor people. And in fact, they use the euphemism of middle class people to talk about what I would consider working class people. And I know that's a larger issue in American politics and American psyche, but it seems like they really do some twisting and turning to try and avoid talking about those people that are in need.
Yeah, it's interesting. Both parties, for their own reasons, have really gone in that direction. Democrats started moving in this direction after they lost 5 out of 6 presidential elections between 1968 and 1988, when, fairly or not, they were viewed as achingly sensitive to the poor, candidates like George McGovern, Walter Mondale, Michael Dukakis, but really ignoring the proverbial union worker in Michigan, something like that, the broad middle class. So Democrats really made a deliberate decision to move back in that direction, not without some consternation and rebellion within their own party. Republicans, on the other hand, were really sensitive to as being cast as the party of the elite, you might say the 1%, the fat cat bankers, and they've moved more toward the center of talking about the middle class, everyday family, something of that nature. So whatever your political viewpoint, you just got to realize the impetus behind it. Both parties have had a reason to kind of, at least rhetorically, move toward the center.
But of course, if everybody's middle class, from the person living in a cardboard box to the gazillionaire, the phrase doesn't mean anything.
Well, that's right. And Mitt Romney in the 2012 campaign got into some trouble when he made that statement, something to the effect of, well, I don't care about the very poor. And of course, he was trying to say that I'm not looking out for the elites. I'm looking really out for the middle class. He just said it in a very clunky manner, as he was prone to do. And that's all that got picked up from that soundbite. And again, that's a cautionary tale why candidates are so careful about what they say.
Tim writes, the phrase going forward is so empty, vapid, and often used as an expression. I think we've got before we go in for one last call, I do want to mention that you're speaking tonight at the Jewish Community Center in Palo Alto.
Yes.
At 8 p.m. Tickets are still available?
They are online, and you can get at the JCC site or the book site, dogwhistlebook.com.
Fabulous. I think we have time for one more call. Somik in Menlo Park.
Hi. It drives me nuts when politicians use the phrase doing nothing is not an option when they're trying to sell us some alternative and they're taking a lot of criticism.
Yeah, you can almost see me cringe through the radio when these phrases come up. That is one it's along the lines of the fierce urgency of now, which actually has a really profound lineage from, I believe it's MLK, if I'm not mangling that one. But it's just become so hackneyed and cliched at this point. It's trying to make it sound like we're action-oriented. It's something that you hear from a management consultant in a PowerPoint presentation. And I just think they've become so overused that a lot of elected officials don't even realize how poorly they come off.
Another zombie idea, beautifully described by David Mark, editor at CNN Politics and co-author with Chuck McCutcheon of a new ebook out today, Double Talk, The Language Code and Jargon of a Presidential Campaign. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.